Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 28th day of Shivat. Thank you to Rabbi Jacob Bromowitz, David Hachhauser, to the OU, for giving us the opportunity to share these thoughts of our great respondents with you. Today's Tshuva is going to be from Shut Yabia Omer, Chelek Tet, Volume 9, Evan Ezer, Tet Vav, the Evan Ezer section, response number 15. It's a response for the 28th of Shvat of Tuf Shin Samach of the year 2000, which I think is fairly late in our response series. I think David Hachhauser pointed out to me 2000 about the latest we've gotten. So this is a response where a woman approaches Rav Yosef and she says that she had gotten divorced about 5 years earlier, and she had a baby out of wedlock on the 17th of Shvat of Tuf Shin Nun Tet of the previous year, which is February of 99. And this response was just about, she's asking the question just about, he's writing this answer just over a year later. She has about a 1-year-old daughter. And she says, I was Zruka Barechov, Kaimli Chorim. I was basically homeless. This is the mother in this situation. And the Rosh Franz, I'm sorry, Rav Yosef's Tshuva, responsum, will almost not deal with the mother at all. But as you watch her ask the question, it's worth watching her passivity and her gemishut is the Hebrew word that comes to mind. It's not really even flexibility, her malleability, this woman. She has no parents. It's sad for her. I think she's a sad case. She has no parents. She has no means of support, it seems like. So when she got divorced, she got thrown into the street. She had nowhere to support herself. And there, she connected with a guy. She has a 7-year-old son. At the time, I think at the time she got divorced, she had a 7-year-old son. And so she meets a guy, and there are no names in the tshuva, they're only initials. She meets a guy, he brought me into his house. Now, you think he brought me into his house means he gave me a place to live, but then she writes, Ve'ikiv asher garti etzlo hariti mimenu. Since I lived with him, I got pregnant. Now, that's a remarkable claim to make, meaning if he's doing a favor to her to help her, you know, out, you could imagine that however he would handle it, he would handle it, but that's not what's going on. He brought her in, they lived together. She just doesn't want to say that, but since she was living with him, she got pregnant, and she had the baby girl. The guy, whose name we don't know, he didn't want the baby girl. He wanted her to get an abortion. She refused to get an abortion. He kicked her out. He kicked her out, and then he fled, or he left, and he went to, you know, Chutzlar, outside of Israel. So now she's got like a seven, so it might be she has a now 7-year-old, or she had a 7-year-old then, but she has like a 7 or 8-year-old boy, and she has this 1-year-old girl, and she meets a guy. And his name is also, no, not in the tshuva, Yud Bet Yud, but Hechzirot Hi Bitshuva. He brought me back to observance. So I have to assume these are Sfaradim because you'll see that the kid is now learning in a Shas Yeshiva in Ramla. So I think she's a Sfaradi, which probably means she was always somewhat traditional anyway. And the leap to becoming observant again or becoming observant wasn't so big. But look at this woman, right? She has a marriage. That doesn't go well. She gets divorced. She's in the street, so she gets taken into somebody's house. She lives with him because she lives with him, and she has a child. She refused to, all of the backbone we watch her is she refuses to get an abortion. But now she's also willing to just, she meets a guy. Now, he may be a very nice guy, and she's now from, right, she's now, so they want to get married. They want to get married, and she plans to be observant. The baby, and so the fundamental issue, which you may not have grasped yet, is that as far as the Gemara was concerned, when the mother is nursing, she's not allowed to get married again, because the worry was that the new husband would, in one of several ways, interfere with the nursing of the baby, and Chazal worried about the baby's health, and therefore they said she can't get married until the baby has completed nursing. We're going to get into that question throughout the course of the responsum, but complicating it, but for her purposes, the mother says now, I'm not nursing. She says the baby nursed one day in the hospital and one day at home, but then I stopped. And there's another example of her fundamental inability to make standards for herself. She says she stopped because the boy didn't like it. The 7-year-old, whatever he was, if he was a 6-year-old or he was now he's 7, or he was a 7-year-old, now he's 8, but he didn't like it. So she stopped nursing. Now, and it's not such a terrible crime because the baby takes a baby formula, Materna, a baby formula. The baby's doing fine. The baby's growing. Her weight's good. She's thriving. It's all good. I just, as I watch this mother, I think it's interesting to watch her and see her inability to stand up for anything, almost anything, other than the not getting the abortion, which is a great thing to stand up for. But so in any case, so she didn't nurse the baby, which isn't a tragedy. Many women have not nursed babies and raised them. I'm not saying it's a tragedy. I'm just saying the fact that a 7-year-old doesn't like that you're nursing doesn't seem to be a reason to make a decision about nursing or not nursing. But that's what she did. So she met this boy, this young man. He wants to marry her. He has a great relationship with the boy. right? The boy loves the guy, and the boy is now learning in the Talmud Torah Shas in Ramla. And so it all seems to be going well. And this young man, this Yud Bet Yud, this firm guy who's brought her and her son back to tradition, has agreed in a full agreement to support the family, right, until they're adults. Meaning he's willing to adopt the kids, as happens in these kinds of marriages, right? So that's what he's going to do. So the question is, can they get married? Now, why can't they get married? They can't get married because she has a one-year-old. And halachically, yeah, until a baby is weaned until like two, it's the age is two in halacha, they can't get married. So what are you going to do? I don't really want to spoil the ending, but obviously Moshe Feinstein is going to find a way for them to get married. The interesting part is watching him do it when the thrust of halacha would seem to go the other way. So he points out the Zagos Mordechai in Yevamot, who talks about a menikashinit abra biznut. So let's say you have a woman who got pregnant out of wedlock. She had no relationship. She got pregnant, and now she's nursing that baby. Can she get married to somebody else? So some people said yes, some people said no. But so the question is, Rabbeinu Tam said that a grusha, a divorced woman who's being a meineket, cannot get married to somebody else because, or I think it should be the way around. Rabbeinu Tam thinks that she can, I think, because the father of the baby will force her to continue to nurse, even though she's married to a new guy. The father will take her to court. Well, this will make arrangements to be sure that the baby gets nursed, the baby gets taken care of. So there's somebody who's, in other words, protecting the rights of and the needs of the baby. But biznut mi chufena, right? That's Rabbeinu Tam's position. But if she's got pregnant out of wedlock, and there's no father in the picture. So then we worry that the Mordechai is worrying that if she marries somebody else, that new father won't care about the nursing. The nursing will interfere with whatever it is. The nursing will interfere with her ability to get pregnant again. He might want to get pregnant with his own child. Whatever it is, it'll get in the way of. And therefore we're worried about that. But the other chachamim didn't agree because they said because the Beit Din will force her to nurse. So that's the way the Mordechai has. The Mordechai seems to imply that the majority opinion was that there are situations where we'll allow a nursing mother to marry, and that situation would be either a grusha, maybe because there's the first father around who will do it, and somebody who got pregnant biznut out of wedlock also, meaning it'll only be an almana, a widow who won't, although it's not clear why there too the courts wouldn't force a nurse. In any case, Rabbi Akiva writes about that the question about a grusha, about a divorcee, is whether it's included in the language of the original takana. The original takana of Chazal, the original ruling of Chazal was that a meineket chaveiro, somebody who was nursing for another man, cannot get remarried, and that's the question. But when it comes to Znut, it's clearly not part of Meineket Chaveiro because we don't know who the father is, basically, and therefore Rabbi Akiva Eiger says the issue is it didn't come into the Gezeira at all. It's not included in the decree of Chazal, in the ruling of Chazal, and therefore she should be allowed to, meaning if Chazal said somebody who's nursing for another man, I would think Meineket Chaveiro means somebody who's nursing because it's always for another man. But Rabbi Akiva Eiger is suggesting, based on the way the Mordechai presents it, and based on this debate between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rash, the Rabbi Akiva Eiger was suggesting that no, maybe it's only when there's an identifiable father out there that we have this issue, because it'll create marital discord, whatever is going on. But if there's no identifiable father out there that we know of, so then it's not considered Meineket Chaveiro. It didn't become part of the Gzeira, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger adds, and it also might be, it's a milta de lo shchicha. It's not so common to get pregnant out of wedlock. Question of common, thank God, in Rabbi Akiva's time wasn't so common. Thank God, I think in our time still, it's not so common for Jewish women so much to get pregnant out of wedlock, especially not traditional Sephardi Jewish women to get pregnant out of wedlock. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva says that it's possible it's not included in the Gezeira for that very reason, because we have a principle also that we don't apply decrees of Chazal to unusual situations. We often say, Milta de lo shkicha lo gazir rabbanan. When they make decrees, when they make rulings, they make them for general cases. For odd cases that don't come up so much, they don't. And we'll get back to that in a little bit. But the problem is, Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, this is Rabbi Akiva Eiger saying, since Shulchan Aruch says explicitly that it's prohibited, chalilali, that I can't just rule against Shulchan Aruch, because that's not what we do. But since there's a lot of reason in the case that Rabbi Akiva Eiger was talking about, that you want to let this woman and get married, as we're going to talk about here in our situation as well for Avad Yosef. So, and you can just combine heterim, you find different reasons to think that something might be allowed. So in Rabbi Eger's case, this also, she never actually started nursing, and she can take an oath, Al-Dad Rabbi, make an irrevocable oath that that she won't stop feeding the baby or taking care of the baby until the baby is 24 months old, then there's room to be Mekel. That's the Rabbi Kibbeh. That's going to be a very important foundation stone for Avad Yosef, because he's basically saying that when a woman gets pregnant, well, we don't know who the father is, the father's not around, which is the case of this Sephardi woman who's now wants to get married to another Sephardi man, and they become observant. The original father wanted her to abort it, is gone off to Chutz Laaretz, who's fundamentally not there. That would be like a situation like that as well. And you could argue that maybe Chazal didn't make their gezerah, didn't make their decree about her not marrying for that situation. And then there were other achronim who held that as well. Mariyantz and the Notabi Yehuda also said that since the zona is not, Notabi didn't say there's not so much zona out there, there's not so many women who have relations out of wedlock. He said it's not so common that they become pregnant, because they make efforts not to become pregnant, because unmarried women don't want to become pregnant. And therefore he thought it wasn't so common they would become pregnant. Again, that would be something you'd have to check out in every time. But the Maharam Shik didn't agree with this. He has a Mishle Melech, and he claimed, and there's going to be a broad claim that's relevant to our situation, they brought halakhic claim, the Davka b'milta de geder usiag amrinan milta lo shkicha lo gazer rabban. It's only when, Chazal have different kinds of takana, different kinds of rules they make, different kinds of ordinances. So one is, he says, is a geder usiag. It's a fence, it's a boundary, it's protective of some issue. That's where, so let's say they say, you know, you can't touch muksa on Shabbos because it's a geder usiag, it's to protect you from carrying on Shabbos, or something like that. So they have a protective thing. That's where the Maharam Shik says, based on the Mishle Melech, that's where you have this idea that if it's not a common situation, they didn't bother with it. Why? Since it's protective of some broader principle, some broader Torah principle. If it's not a common act that'll come up, they didn't take that into account when they were making the Gezerah. Aval b'takana. But when it was for some positive purpose, not as a protective thing against some violation of the Torah, but it's a way to make the world better, a takana. And here, that's clearly what it is. It's a way to help the baby, help ensure the baby's being nursed and brought up in a healthy way. There, the Maharam Shik claimed that Gzeirot would apply even to unusual cases. So that ruins, if we accept that Maharam Shik, that ruins the Rabbi Kivager claim, right? Because the fact that she got pregnant in an unusual way, and there's no father around, that's an unusual thing, and therefore Rabbi Kivager suggested maybe it's not included in the takana, so you can't claim that according to Maharam Shik, because we don't care about usual and unusual when it comes to takanot. Except that it's not clear that we accept that Maharam Shik. So aside from the Notabi Yehuda, who didn't seem to accept it, and the Rabbi Kivei Ger, who didn't seem to think about those things, but the Maharam Shik came later. So you could say, well, maybe if they knew the Maharam Shik, they would have said, oh, you're right, and they would have whatever. But the Birka Yosef said that there's another situation that's uncommon. There is an assumption that it could happen. I think we often today assume that this cannot happen, but there are those who thought it could happen. A woman gets pregnant in a bathtub or in a bathhouse, meaning that somehow the material from the man that helps create a baby was in the water there, and she goes in the water, and somehow it gets into her, and it fertilizes an egg, and she gets pregnant. Whether or not that can happen, but in the sense that, if you have a woman for whom that happens, so the Birkeyosa says, even though it's a milta de lo shchicha, that's our person, even though it's uncommon, it's clearly uncommon, but since there is a danger to the baby, so we say chamira sakanta, and that's included in the sakana. So that seems to assume that even though that's his first thought, but he concludes that the other way. He concludes that even though there might be some element of danger to it, and even though it's a takana, since it's a milta de lo shchicha, since it's uncommon, she can get married. So that shows that he didn't, in the end, he raised that possibility explicitly, and he did not accept it. And he said, no, since it's uncommon, it's not included in the original ruling of Chachamim. And there too, and so too, a Chacham Svi said, in a whole different context, but we're now tracking down the principle of whether or not uncommon situations are included in Gezerot of Chazal and Takanot of Chazal, in ordinances of Chazal that are made just not to protect any Torah principle, to make the world a better place in some way. So an example is, there is a principle in the Gemara that Gemara assumes that if I pay money for an item, if a person pays money for an item, money is in fact kona. Money in fact affects a purchase. And then the Chazal came along and said we don't want that to happen. And the reason was because if we allow that money to be the purchasing thing, then we're worried that the product, whatever it is, will still be in the possession of the seller. And if, let's say, a fire happens, that the seller will not work hard to save the produce, and you'll end up having people who have paid a lot of money, and then their produce or their product, whatever they bought, gets destroyed, and they end up losing. And therefore, Chazal said that, no, you need to have Mashiach, you need to have the buyer do an active acquisition in some way. And yet, in that situation, the Chacham Tzvi pointed out, we do have a rule that if it came up in an odd situation, if some milta de l'shchicha came around, if some unusual occurrence came around, the takana wouldn't apply to that situation, and yet it's not a gzeir, it's a takana, and yet we say that it doesn't apply to milted lo shkichas, to odd situations. Mishnah Melech pointed out another example that the Rashba seems to have held, that when we say that an heir is not allowed to buy and sell the property of his father until he's 20, and the rule that's a gzeira derabanan, it's a takana derabanan, it's a ruling of Chazal to help the kid achieve some kind of mature perspective on buying and selling things before he does that. Otherwise, we're worried that he'll use up his inheritance. But the Rashba seemed to say that if it's not a father-son inheritance, let's say somebody inherits from an uncle or a cousin or whatever it is, so there the takana wouldn't apply because those kinds of inheritances are much rarer. And since they're rare, they're a milta de lo shechicha, they're a rare occurrence, and Chazal did not make a gzeira in a rare occurrence. So that too is a takana. So that's another example where it seems to be that this rule that we apply takanot, even that it's only gzeirot that don't apply and a milta de lo shechicha, that doesn't seem to be correct. Or at least it's a matter of dispute, a matter of debate among the authorities, and therefore you'd think that you wouldn't have to follow it. And there's an explicit mari mintz on the side of being mekel by a meineket zona, by a woman who had a baby out of wedlock, and now an actual meineket. He thought even there, the mari mintz thought even there, you should be mekel to let her get married. So it's a matter of machloket, and he's not nobody, the mari mintz, and therefore he thinks you can, provide you safe things, there's lots and lots of room to say you can rely on them. So one stand, he's going to add more to this, but one stand you could have taken is to say that since this is a matter of debate as to whether the whole rule about not getting married applies to her, and it's a matter of standing of long-lasting debate about whether such takanot, such ordinances apply in unusual situations, and you have important authorities who say it does not and she can get married, that would be good enough. That would be one way, one avenue of saying it would be good enough. We could just rely on them. There are good authorities who say that a woman who's gotten pregnant and had a baby out of wedlock is such an unusual situation. The Chazal did not include it in the ordinance of nursing mothers having to wait, that even if she was a nursing mother, she could get married in this situation. Here, Rav Moshe Vayyosef adds, since she only nursed for 2 days, right, and she stopped before this issue of marriage ever came up, and she weaned the child for whatever reason, then that's even better than that the Chazal knew of a different situation. Chazal knew of, let's say, the mother had given the baby to a nursemaid. So there she's provided for the baby's continued nursing. Even if she wants to get married, you might have thought, and that affects the situation, maybe she can, maybe she can't. But here, it's even better than that because she's stopped feeding the baby. She's not stopped nursing the baby. We've had 6 months and more after which she's been not nursing the baby, and the baby's developing great, right? And she doesn't even have any milk left. So there's no reason, Rav Yosef says there's no reason to think that a court should coerce her to not get married because she doesn't even have any milk. Like, it's not she can do anything about it. And he points out the Shut Beit Yitzchak, which I think is Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector, says that if she couldn't nurse for some reason, let's say she had a lot of pain, then courts don't force her to nurse. It's not like nursing is an absolute obligation. The obligation is to make sure the baby's well taken care of. So if you have a woman who, for whatever reason, nursing is extremely painful for her, the Beit Yitzchak said, you shouldn't force the mother to nurse her because her life comes first. And you find other ways. You can find, in those days, you'd find a nursemaid, you'd find a formula, you'd find whatever it is. And therefore, here too, Rav Yosef says, there's no reason to think that the courts force her to continue nursing, especially because she can't nurse, and she's found a perfectly good substitute for the baby. Eat. Rav Avadya Yosef quotes a bunch of more sources, as he does, on this issue. One of the questions that comes up is also whether the baby had originally nursed to the point where the baby recognized the nursemaid or the mother. So that makes it more complicated, because if the baby didn't recognize the mother yet, right, doesn't know who, when the baby's really little, doesn't know who's nursing, he or she is nursing from, so then you can substitute another nursemaid and there's not going to be a problem. But where the baby already knows the mother, so then it's not always clear and it's not always possible the baby's going to be willing to switch to another mother, another nursemaid. So there's a whole debate about when she's divorced, she can require the first husband to pay her to nurse, and that might affect it. In any case, as the Beis Yosef says, as Rav Vayusev quotes the Beis Yosef, who says, I've seen people who have been mekel, who have been lenient about this issue, and I don't protest it because they have good sources to rely on, and it's a Rabbanan. So, in other words, therefore, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't completely disagree with the Rashba and with those who allowed it, and therefore, in our situation, where it's certainly true that she has, that the baby hasn't recognized any mother in terms of not being willing to nurse from somebody else because the baby takes formula from a bottle all the time, he thinks there's a lot of room to say that you can let her marry somebody else. Another avenue of leniency is that the Ramah writes that a mufkeret is a more lenient situation. So what a mufkeret means, somebody who's like available to everybody in the world, meaning she's just... One situation would be, let's say a woman sadly is a widow or is a divorcee. We have no reason to suspect her chastity, and until she gets married, she'll live a proper Jewish life as a single woman until such time as she has the ability to get married. So in that situation, we can tell her, yes, get married, not get married. But let's say you have a woman who sadly, for whatever reasons, is not going to live like that. She's going to find men to live with. She's a mufkeret. And she'll go with whatever men go with. So if we tell her not to get married, so the Ramah was making in that situation. He said, well, better for her to get married than her just doing that. And the Achronim wondered about mufkeret, meaning our woman here isn't quite a mufkeret. She had this one relationship with this man with whom she had the baby, but she was living with him at the time, and now she's found another man. We don't really think of her as quite a mufkeret. But Rav Ovadia Yosef says the Achronim talk about what qualifies as a mufkeret for this purpose, and he quotes from the Otzar HaPoskim of a Riha Kohen Rapport. It says that nowadays she'ena shiltonot ma'anishim alas nut behaskama, that the government doesn't get involved when people have sexual relationships that are non-marital with consent, right? So there was a time, let's say even today in the United States, mostly the United States of America, that it's legally prohibited to have prostitution, right? But nobody, right? So that you could argue is maybe some kind of governmental involvement. But if two people meet at a bar and just decide to go off and have relations with each other, the government's not getting involved. That's their private conduct. But there was a time when the government would get involved, where you had to get married before you were allowed to do such things. So once the government will not get involved anymore, so the Maria Cohen Rappaport said that a woman who was zanta filu pa machat, even if one time a woman had relations out of wedlock, you have to worry that she'll do it again. And he thought that qualifies a mufkeret, which is an interesting claim, because especially for our purposes here, when we are concerned about whether she's a mufkeret, what we mean is, we're worried if the rule that we don't let her marry will rebound against us, meaning we're worried that the baby's health. But we also would be worried about her spiritual health. So if we think that keeping her unmarried will lead her to have, you know, casual and promiscuous sexual relations, so then already there's room to say, the Ramah says, to be mekel and let her get married, because that's better overall. I mean, the risk to the baby is a risk that Chazal cared about, but it's not like it's an absolute risk. It's not like they're definitely sure that if she gets married, the baby's going to die or the baby's health is going to suffer. It was enough of a worry that they made exer about it. But the Ramah's point is, but if the mother's a mufkeret, that's a countervailing worry that might be here. So what qualifies as a mufkeret? So the Maria Cohen Rapport said, in an environment in which there's no government enforcement of any kind of sexual mores, or of any kind of consensual sexual morality, then if she finds out that she can find men who will take care of her or whatever, if she just has a relationship, if we say to her, well, you're not getting married, she'll say, fine, so I'll live with somebody. I'll live with multiple people. I'll live with whoever will give me a bed for the night. And what do I care? Right? So that's going to be worse from our perspective. And therefore, we would certainly prefer, we would qualify her as a mufkeret. We would qualify her as somebody who's prepared to allow herself to be promiscuous for whatever purposes, for whatever that helps her with. And therefore, we'll allow her to get married. That will be enough for us to say, yeah, you want to? We can allow you to get married. And Rav Uziel and Shpiti Uziel agreed the same way. So here too, Rav Yosef thinks the fact that she was willing to live out of wedlock with the man by whom she got pregnant, and I can imagine saying that doesn't qualify as a mufkeret. It's not like she was just willing to sleep with anybody. But Rav Yosef is saying, well, she was willing to sleep with that guy because he took her in. So if we tell her now she can't get married, she might sleep with another guy who would take her in. So that qualifies, she thinks, as a mufkeret. And once she qualifies as a mufkeret, we can allow her to get married. Because if we don't, what's she going to do? The man who wants to marry her will marry somebody else, because theoretically you could say, well, but why wouldn't he wait a year? But let's say he won't. We have to worry that he won't wait a year. So he'll go, and then if he'll go, she'll find the next guy, and the next guy, if the next guy is not for him, because again, I no comment on her malleability at the beginning of the tshuva, and that's a relevant consideration here. The first guy she was willing to sleep with, a guy who would take her into his house, maybe she'll do the same thing with this guy. And therefore, we can treat her as a mufkeret in the sense that it'll allow us to be lenient with her and let her marry this fine Jewish man. Also, he thinks that the fact that she's drinking, that the baby is having formula is even better than a nursemaid, because the mother herself can give the formula. The mother herself is clearly invested in the health of the baby, and therefore, and it works for her, and we have a good evidence that it works for her. He thinks that helps out as well, and therefore, that's even better than all of the situations where we say that if she had a nursemaid, that we'd allow the mother to get married because the nursemaid will take care of the baby. In addition, he quotes Rav Kook in Ezra Cohen. Rav Kook pointed out that the Gemara in Bava Kama has a general principle that people are allowed to say if there's a takana that Chachabim made for a certain person's benefit. And there are certain times when Chazal make a takana for a certain person's benefit. So the Gemara in Bava Kama says that the person can say, I don't want that takana. Right, that to connote some of the rules that Chazal made, if they're for a particular person's benefit, they're not obligatory on that person. They're made for that person's benefit. If a person wants to reject, they can reject it. So Rav Kook had said that in such situations, if we think that the takana was made for the benefit of a child, but it turns out that that child's benefit is something else, so children can't make this halachic claim, I don't want the takana of Chazal to apply. But Rav Kook's point and Rav Ovadia Yosef's point is, we're allowed to say it for them in situations where it's absolutely clear that if the child was around and was able to speak on his or her behalf, the child would say it, so then would say, I don't want this takana. So in our situation, meaning if this little baby girl who's 1 year old was faced with the situation of, well, your mother's not nursing you anyway, right? You have formula, you're doing fine, and if your mother marries this man, your life will be much better, but Chazal said you shouldn't marry this man because they're worried about your health. So what would the baby say? She'd say, of course I want my mother to marry the man. So that Rav Kook and Rav Ovadia Yosef is quoting Rav Kook and saying that he agrees, and he thinks it's true, that we can say on behalf of the baby, we don't want this takana of Chazal to apply. That only applies to rules that Chazal made explicitly for somebody's benefit. There are plenty of rules Chazal made to train us in how to act or to protect us from acting from violating the Torah in certain ways. We can't reject those takana chazal. It's only the ordinance of chazal that are made for a particular person's benefit. That's where this idea comes into play. Especially since, right, if she doesn't marry this man, she's going to be poor and impoverished and all that. And in addition to which, as Rav Yosef puts it very beautifully, ha-beitin avihem shel yitomim. It's the job of beitin, and we forget this so often, it's the job of courts to protect certain people and to care about certain people, and one of them are orphans. And this little baby girl, she's not an orphan, she has a mother, but she has no father, and it's part of the job of chazal and of batei din, of courts, to protect her interests, and that's what he's doing here. Then he quotes out the sources that a book of response called Agudat Ezov had held that if the new father has made an absolute commitment to support the orphans, to support the children, then that helps allowing even a nursing mother to get married and to be lenient about that. And so this man has already agreed to that as well. It's also true that the son from the first husband, remember, this woman has had two children by two different men. So the son from the first, the son, so he has nobody supporting him either. Now, he's not a nursing child, but he has nobody supporting him. So who's going to support him, not only in his material needs, but his spiritual needs as well? And Rav Yosef says, he thinks that's a very important qualification. Meaning, when Chazal talk about a meinek and a nursing mother, Rav Yosef is saying, well, but what about other children who are implicated in the family structure? He thinks that that's a relevant consideration as well. If there's another child whose needs, they're not nursing needs, but they're serious needs, they're serious economic needs, and they're serious spiritual needs, that is also a very big part of the picture. So, since we already have reasons to be lenient about the nursing issue, he thinks this adds to the permissibility as well. Aside from the mother also, right? After all, the mother's going to also stay observant, and they'll probably keep Tarat HaMishpacha, especially in this Friday community, they're very careful about those kinds of things. So she's going to now, a whole set of halachot, serious halachot, that she probably hadn't kept before, she's going to start keeping again, then, and lots of other mitzvos. That's another important factor, important thing to think about in allowing her to marry the man. And she's going to raise her children, right, with this man to be from, and that's going to help the children. So all that he thinks is important. And then one more thing that's important is that this young man who she's about to marry has not had children yet. I don't think he's had any children yet, but he certainly hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Pirya Verivya. He hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of having children. So that's a Torah obligation. It's Rav Yosef says, if you look in Shu'at Chesed Avraham, so he says you can push aside the rabbinic prohibition of Meinek and Chavero, of a nursing mother, to fulfill Pirya Verivya. Meaning, Rav Yosef said this tshuva, Rav Yosef is not relying on it solely, but this tshuva made the claim that let's say you had an absolutely, like a widow, who's nursing a baby, she's actively nursing, and she's actively a widow, so that's exactly the takana of Chazal, the ruling of Chazal, that you have to protect the health of the baby. If the man she meets and wants to marry has not yet fulfilled Pirya Verivya, that's a biblical obligation, this book of responses had held, that's good enough to push it aside. And he based it on the fact that Rabbeinu Tam had permitted a woman to get married during Shiva. Now, why she would have to do that is an odd question. We can't go back to that historical time to know why that would be, but why couldn't they wait till after the Shiva? But he allowed a woman to get married during the Shiva because of the midst of Pirya Verivya. Right, so that's pushing aside a rabbinic issue of Shiva of mourning. So this Shu'at Chesed L'Avraham said, see, we push aside rabbinic prohibitions in order to fill the mitzvah Pirya Verivya. Now, Rabbi Yehuda didn't like that because he says, if you're going to include a heter like that, then why not let men who have not yet had any children marry women who are shniot la'arayot? Shniot la'arayot means there are sexual relations that Torah prohibited, let's say one sister, and then there are sexual relations that the Chazal prohibited. So Chazal prohibited sexual relations that are called Shniyot Lariot. They are secondary Arayot. And so then you say, so what are you going to do? You can allow all of those? Now I have to say, you could argue that there's a difference between things that are Arayot and claimed by Chazal to be sexually prohibited things, as opposed to things like nursing or Shiva, which are rabbinic prohibitions that don't have to do with the actual problem of the sexuality. Meaning, when Chazal created somebody being a Shniyot L'Arayot, I could have imagined responding to the Nota Biyuda, when Chazal created Shniyot L'Arayot, they were saying, this is a relationship that should never happen. So the fact that the guy has a Torah requirement to have children wouldn't affect this whatsoever. But if you have a woman who fundamentally is permitted to somebody, but Chazal said, don't do it now because of Shiva, or don't do it now because she's nursing, I can imagine that would be a situation where you'd say that the rabbinic prohibition goes away. In any case, based on all of this, I go down as if also thought the fact that the young man had not yet filled the mitzvah of Rivia helps, and therefore all of this together, since Rivia is now wrapping it up, since it's not going to help the baby at all if we tell the mother not to get married because she's not nursing anyway because she has no milk because she's been giving the baby formula for all that time, for all those months, and therefore the only reason would be say, well, we don't make differences within rabbinic rules, but the answer is that we have an answer to that as well. The Magen Avraham quotes a Truma Sedeshin that when it comes to a prohibition, you can't say that because of lo plo you're going to be any stricter than the original prohibition. Here you have all the reasons why even if she was actively nursing, we would let her marry this man, and therefore Rabbi Yosef thinks that she can marry the man, and God willing, they have, it's 17 years later now, so God willing, this has worked out well in their hand. They are living happily together based on Rabbi Yosef finding the way to allow, even though Chazal seemed to say that a new mother cannot get married, finding a way to let this new mother get married and hopefully build a wonderful life with her husband. And that's a responsible day for the 28th of Shvat. With thanks to me, OU, to David Hochhaus, to Rabbi Jacob Bromowitz. Have a great day.